from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration.
That was President Donald Trump declaring victory yesterday. The Justice Department said that Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation found no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Democratic leaders vowed to continue their investigation and called for release of the full report. Coming up on Forum, we'll bring you reaction and analysis, and we want to hear from you, and that's next after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Special Counsel Robert Mueller found no evidence that President Trump's campaign conspired or coordinated with Russia to influence the 2016 presidential election, the Justice Department said yesterday. In a four-page memo to Congress, Attorney General William Barr also said that Mueller made no decision over whether the president obstructed justice, and President Trump posted on Twitter that there was, quote, no collusion, no obstruction, complete and total exoneration. Democratic leaders called on Barr to release the full Mueller report. And here's House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff in an interview yesterday on ABC's This Week talking about the special counsel.
I have trust in his prosecutorial judgment, but that doesn't mean, of course, that there isn't compelling and incriminating evidence that should be shared with the American people.
What do you think of the Mueller findings, or at least the DOJ summary of them? You can call us now and let us know. At our toll-free number, it's 866-733-6786, or email us forum at kqed.org. And joining us first is Katie Benner, Justice Department reporter with the New York Times. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. Well, the public's right to transparency, that's what presumably the Democrats are going to push for here. But how likely is that to happen in any kind of, order, especially time order?
Well, sure. Keep in mind that what the Justice Department sent to the special counsel, sent to Congress yesterday was merely their top line findings. They wanted to sort of to address some of the big questions that were hanging over the report immediately. And the Justice Department has not yet sent over its full summary of the Mueller report, so that is still to come. Basically, what's going on is right now Robert Mueller and his team are looking at the full report that they sent to Attorney General Bill Barr, and they are deciding for themselves what information should be redacted, what they do not think, what Mueller's team does not think should be made public. And then Bill Barr and his team will work from what is left to decide how to summarize best the special counsel's findings and deliver them to legislators.
What we're talking about here is, for the most part, classified material?
Well, you know, the things that will probably be redacted will be grand jury testimony that is usually not publicly shared, and then, of course, any classified material, and very notably, any material that could pertain to an ongoing investigation. Keep in mind that Robert Mueller, as he did his investigation, he stuck pretty much within the confines of you know, his mandate, what happened in the 2016 election. So he referred out other cases to federal prosecutors in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, in Virginia, and in Washington, D.C., other questions about campaign finance violations and perhaps even Trump's business dealings that he might have stumbled upon. Now, if there's information in the full report that he submitted to Bill Barr that pertains to any of those cases, I don't think that the special counsel's office will want that publicly shared either.
So when we're talking about a report that is billed as being comprehensive, we're talking largely about the initial mandate of that prosecutorial office, that is to investigate ties to Russia in the campaign?
Exactly. It does seem that Special Counsel Robert Mueller stuck very closely to his mandate. And keep in mind, he was looking at three things. He was looking at, did Russia interfere in the 2016 election? He was looking at whether or not Trump or any of his campaign team or any of his inner circle knowingly helped Russia in that effort and aided and abetted Russia as Russia tried to interfere in the election. And then third, whether the president himself obstructed justice in the midst of the investigation. On the first question, interestingly, did Russia interfere in the investigation? It is clear, based on the indictments that Robert Mueller has put into the public and based on the letter from Attorney General Barr yesterday, that in fact Russia did attempt to interfere in the 2016 election. They did want to undermine the process, and the country did in fact want to sway the election for Donald Trump. So I think that on that first question, we finally do have an answer. On the second question, he did not find enough evidence to support a charge that the president and his inner circle worked with Russia in that effort. That is something that has made Trump's detractors very, very unhappy, and yet that does also seem to be a fairly final conclusion from the report. The third point, did the president obstruct justice? That has probably been the most unsatisfactory part of what Bill Barr sent to Congress yesterday, because it seems that the special counsel's office and Robert Mueller decided ultimately not to weigh in on that question. And we are told by different Justice Department officials that that was Robert Mueller's decision.
Let's bring Rory Little into this. He's here with us in the studio. He's professor of law at UC Hastings College of Law and professor of constitutional law, former federal prosecutor. That's the big sticking point at this point, isn't it, Rory? I mean, the fact is that obstruction of justice, according to the special prosecutor, was probably not exonerated. And the president is saying he's fully exonerated. So we have some pretty strong horns locked here.
Well, you're absolutely right that Bob Mueller's letter, it's the one sentence that's quoted, says this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, but it also does not exonerate him. So to claim exoneration is wrong. I do think it's very unsatisfying because the Barr letter has a legal error in it. And the error seems to be the idea that because there was no conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia, that suggests you can't obstruct justice because you can't obstruct that investigation because the investigation yielded nothing. That's just legally incorrect. You can obstruct justice whether an investigation leads to anything or not. Obstruction of justice is a wholly separate idea, which is interfering with an ongoing investigation. That legal error, I think, is the premise for this exoneration, if you want to call it that, by Bill Barr. And that's just wrong.
Why do you think it was punted to Bill Barr and Rob Rosenstein? I mean, the fact of the matter is that Special Prosecutor Mueller could have gone forward with the prosecution, couldn't he?
Well, I don't think he thought so. I think he believes that he has to follow DOJ policy, which is that the president can't be indicted. And he says that. He says that apparently in his letter, this is not a normal prosecutive conclusion that we're reaching, because since he can't be indicted, we're not going to render conclusion. His letter does say there were difficult issues of fact as well as law on the obstruction count. This means, I think, that Bob Mueller believes there was plenty of evidence there where a reasonable prosecutor might have gone forward, but he didn't feel that it was his job to make that conclusion. And I'm not sure it was Bill Barr's job to make that conclusion either without at least examining the evidence. You can't examine that much evidence, 2,800 subpoenas, in 48 hours.
And come up with a four-page memo. And the Democrats, of course, are pretty much taking the opposite position on that and saying they have to see the underlying evidence. I'm wondering, though, what your thoughts are, Rory, about the fact that they said no further indictments. And certainly a lot of people were cheering for others to be indicted, particularly Trump's son and Jared Kushner and so forth. But to say that there are no further indictments from the special prosecutor's office doesn't necessarily obviate that there can't be further indictments.
I think that's absolutely right. In fact, there are cases going forward now. I mean, the criminal case against Roger Stone, and Roger Stone is believed to have, you know, worked with the Russians in releasing hacked emails through WikiLeaks and all of that. His case is still going forward. That's a criminal case. It's still proceeding. There are other investigations we know are referred to four different U.S. attorneys' offices. We don't know where those are going to go. I do believe it's right that the report will not want to be released to the extent it impacts these pending investigations. I would say that the grand jury material is sort of a red herring. There is precedent for releasing grand jury material when the president is being investigated. Both the Nixon special prosecutor and the Clinton special prosecutor, their full reports went to Congress and the courts, including grand jury material, because the court gave permission for that and said in this type of case, we should have everything go. So the idea that grand jury material has to be excluded at this point is just not precedentally supported.
Well, what about Katie Benner? Let me go back to you. Katie Benner, again, is Justice Department reporter for The New York Times. What about the public's right to know here? How much does that really figure or weigh in what's going to be essentially received by the U.S. Congress?
I think before we address the public's right to know, I just want to clarify one thing. In the letter sent to Congress yesterday, Bill Barr says that he and Rod Rosenstein made the determination that the president was, you know, to not charge the president with obstruction. They specifically say that that determination was made, quote, without regard to and is not based on the constitutional consideration that you can't indict a sitting president. They say that it is concluded based on the, quote, evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation. So I have concluded the evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. They are not, absolutely not, basing this on the idea that you can't indict a sitting president. And I've seen that out in the public. I've seen that on Twitter. That is not the case. In terms of the public's right to know, I do think that Congress is going to make a really strong argument that the public definitely does have a right to know, and that that is going to bring a lot of pressure to bear on the department itself. Attorney General Barr, Rob Rosenstein are very cognizant of this, and I've been told that in the special counsel's office, they're cognizant of this as well. And so that there is going to be some sort of effort made to, in the summary to Congress, address a lot of the open questions that were raised by this letter, give more information supporting evidence, especially vis-a-vis the president. And I think that we now live in a world where we can possibly expect the full report will sometime, at some point, dribble out no matter what anybody at the Justice Department wants.
And Rory Lowell, where this heads now in many people's minds is not only to Congress investigating and getting material, but also to the Southern District in New York. And it occurs to me that the Southern District in New York is technically just like the prosecutorial investigation of Robert Mueller under the aegis of or under the authority of the Attorney General of the United States. And there's already cries in Congress that, well, given Bill Barr's record, is this really fair to have him be the interpreter?
Well, that's true. And let me talk about the Southern District in a second. The U.S. attorney there, who's appointed by President Trump, has recused from Trump investigations. So it's gone down to career prosecutors in his office. Let me push back a little bit on Katie Bennett's point about whether this is based on the constitutional idea you can't indict the president. Bill Barr does say that in his letter. In the two sentences before that, he says, "We consulted with the Office of Legal Counsel." This leaves a big question. This is a question I would investigate if I were the Democrats or anybody. Why did you consult with the Office of Legal Counsel? What exactly did you ask the Office of Legal Counsel? If you weren't asking them about the constitutional question about indicting the president, to me, the implication is that's the only reason you would go to OLC. So, you know, that's a question for me. Southern District of New York has a reputation for being independent. People jokingly refer to it as the Sovereign District of New York. We'll see where they go. There's certainly business dealings and strands tied to the rest of the Trump family and the business enterprise before the election that I think that office is looking at. We know that with regard to the Michael Cohen set of facts. The other investigations, we're not even sure what the scope of those investigations may be. I do think it's accurate to say the special counsel has concluded there was no Trump connection. Well, they say there was not enough evidence to connect them to a conspiracy with the Russian government. Bob Mueller is owed an apology by the president to some extent, and he's a hero in indicting 25 Russian trolls and corporations for their interference in the election. We now know beyond a reasonable doubt, I think, we'll see if that's proven in court. The Russians aren't showing up for that one.
Well, there are also people in the Trump administration who are tied to the campaign who lied. Well, why would they lie about all these Russian contacts comes back to us.
Well, and they lied about Russian contacts, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Katie, did you want to respond to that remark of Professor Lowell's about indicting a sitting president?
All I'm going to do is go back to the text of the letter. I don't speculate and try to get into people's heads and assume what they may or may not have been asking about. They could have been asking about lots of different things at OLC because OLC takes care of many issues. But I do understand that there is a deep, deep desire, especially amongst the president's detractors, to come up with reasons for why Barr's conclusions are wrong. And I respect that desire.
Well, one of the things that has come out in that desire has been, and I'd like your thoughts about this, Katie, and we'll go to Rory on it too, the fact that, and Adam Schiff has said a great deal about this, that the president was never interviewed by the prosecutor and the prosecutor's investigative team. He never came up for an interview, and there are many who feel that that's the big missing piece here.
I think that is one of the most interesting parts here. It's one of the most interesting unanswered questions. And again, I'm not going to pretend that I can't answer that question because I'm not in Robert Mueller's head. I'm not in the head of any of his prosecutors, nor am I in the head of Rod Rosenstein. But you're right. How do you establish? So obstruction, in large part, is determined based on criminal intent. And how do you determine whether or not somebody has criminal intent if you do not speak to them? That is an interesting and open question. And I think that if Robert Mueller is ever interviewed by legislators, that's going to be a good question for Robert Mueller. Why did you choose not to subpoena the president? And in doing so, how did you come up with a lack of criminal intent, or what was your view on criminal intent? Again, I see that as an open question. I do think there are probably people who already feel that they have the answer.
I think, Rory Little, it's a central question, and Jay Sekulow and the president's legal team said essentially, I mean, or intimated, they didn't want him to expose himself to perjury. They were afraid, in fact, that that would be what would have occurred.
Yeah, I think Katie's right. I also really respect Bob Mueller's prosecutorial judgment. We don't know how far he went with the request to interview the president. We do know the president submitted written responses after some negotiation on this. I think if you're Bob Mueller, you might conclude that it doesn't do any good to interview the president because you might get him to lie about something because he can't apparently answer questions straightforwardly in any context. But it's unlikely he would say, well, yeah, I intended to, you know, obstruct justice. So I think it might not have been worth it. I will say this. A prosecutor often doesn't get the defendant's testimony on intent. And most prosecutors indict an obstruction case or a perjury case without regard to what the defendant themselves say, because you just draw inferences from facts. And that is the open question that I think we're going to have to see the full report on.
Well, again, I know there's going to be a lot of listener response to the special counsel's report, Robert Mueller delivering that report and ending a two-year investigation, and a summation of four pages coming from the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General. And you may indeed want to weigh in here, and let me give you an opportunity to do that now. Our toll-free number is available, and we'd like to hear your reactions and certainly any questions you may have. We've got Katie Benner on the line here, Justice Department reporter for The New York Times, and Rory Little in studio, professor of law at UC Hastings and a former federal prosecutor. Join the program at our toll-free number now at 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls and welcome your involvement. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Want to hear your thoughts. And you can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let's go back to the whole question of the report being made fully available to the American people. Here's what Sarah Huckabee Sanders had to say about that.
I don't think the president has any problem with it. He has been the most transparent, accessible president we've seen in modern history. This is a person who loves to engage with the media, takes questions day in, day out.
How about that, Katie Benner?
I think that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is doing her job, which is to spin for the president and put forth his point of view. Does the president love to engage with the press? Sure. Does he like to always tell the truth? Absolutely not. So I think that I would take that with many, many grains of sand.
Well, the president is essentially taking what some believe is the victory lap here, Rory Little. I mean, he has said not only that he's fully exonerated, which, as you said, is not a fact, according to essentially what was released by the Attorney General Barr and Rob Rosenstein, but he's also said that this, particularly interesting in his immediate comment from Mar-a-Lago, was the fact that he said people have been hurt, your president has been hurt, and people have been hurt badly, which almost suggests that maybe there's a Manafort pardon down the line here.
Well, I actually think many people believe there will be pardons. It's almost a foregone conclusion. It's one of the reasons you've got some open stateside investigation in New York looking to insulate. The president can't pardon a state crime. The idea that he wants the full report released, here's something we don't know. We don't know how much Bill Barr has advised the White House as to the detailed contents of the report. He hasn't said, by the way, I haven't shown this to the president.
But he works for the president, as I said.
So the president may have seen all of this already.
And he was appointed by the president.
He was. And he also wrote a strong thing saying, I don't think you can indict a sitting president for obstruction of justice for anything the president does.
He also wrote a very strong defense of executive power and sort of went against really what's been laid down in terms of obstruction of justice. But at this point, where do we go from here, do you think, Katie Benner? Let me go to you.
Well, I just want to reiterate that the Justice Department has said that Bill Barr has not talked to the president about the report. The only communications between the Justice Department and the White House have been Bill Barr's chief of staff calling Emmett Flood, the White House attorney, to let them know, one, that they had the report and they were going to be notifying Congress, and he read that letter to Congress that they were going to send on Friday. And then last night, same drill, the attorney general's chief of staff called Emmett Flood and said, we're going to be alerting Congress to their top-line conclusions, and here they are. Bill Barr, the Justice Department has said Bill Barr has not advised the White House on the contents of the report or given them a sneak preview. So I just want to put that one to put a pin in that one. Maybe the Justice Department's completely lying to us, and I'm sure there are many people who think that, but it's strange to get that strong of an on-the-record lie from the Justice Department. Now, in terms of where do we go from here, yes, we're going to look and wait and see the summary. And, you know, it's going to be difficult. I think that right now the Democrats have quieted a little bit while they strategize. We don't know what's going to be the summary, and we do not know how detailed it's going to be. If we get something that's very unsatisfactory, it's going to be an all-out political war, and this is going to be a never-ending subpoena request and interview request process by different members of the House dragging people up to the Hill. If we do get more transparency and we do get information, well, then we're going to see, I think, both parties recalibrate and try to figure out what to do next. So those right now look like our two options based on whatever it is we get in the summary. Nobody's really sure when that summary is coming, but I do think the Justice Department understands that it is under tremendous pressure right now, and the longer it waits, the more certain narratives, especially ultra-partisan narratives, are going to harden and make it almost impossible for them to get true facts out, because people on the left and the right will have already decided and predetermined what they think is true.
Now, that's an important point, too. I think at this stage, you have to ask what the effect of this is going to be, not only on the Democrats, who've been to some extent tainted at this point, if they want to move forward and answer questions that they feel have not been answered. In fact, they've said publicly, a number of them, Nadler included, that there are more questions that remain than have been answered. But you have to ask also an essential question of where the Democrats can pivot on this and where the media can pivot, because the media has been tainted to some extent, too. And we'll certainly hear from our listeners on all of this and more. I just want to mention, when you're talking about questions that haven't been answered, the initial question even about whether or not the president fired Comey for reasons having to do with the Russian investigation, which he apparently indicated to Lester Holt, is still a question that remains and looms out there. Getting some comments from listeners, let me read a tweet here. This is obviously a whitewashing by Barr. I think it's wildly irresponsible of the media to share Republican talking points before anybody has seen the report. You cannot condense 2 years of investigation into 4 pages. And Julia writes, there's something about the AG summary of Mueller report that doesn't sit right. All these connections to Russia with no connecting lines to Trump. I really hope the House gets a copy of the full report, and I want to be convinced that the Attorney General is truly working for the American people, not Trump. We're coming up on a break here. When we return, we'll take more of what we haven't taken any of your calls yet, but we will take your calls when we return. We'll read more of your emails and your postings, and we'll also bring a couple of other voices into the discussion here. I think I have to say goodbye to you, Katie Benner, but appreciate very much your being with us this half hour.
Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Stay tuned. We'll be back. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the Mueller report, which was finally delivered, and a 4-page summary of it came out of the AG's office, done by Attorney General Barr and Deputy Attorney General Rob Rosenstein. And we're going to bring our callers aboard here. We're also going to be joined by a couple of other voices, but let me go to a couple of calls first before we introduce you to the two others who are joining us for this half hour. Doug is our first caller up. Doug, you're on.
I'm really, really asking you, as a representative of the media, the rest of the media, the general public, to focus in on something that's extraordinarily important here in the revelations that were made yesterday, which is that it's very possible that the president engaged in obstruction of justice. That is the most important part of the Barr letter, because what it means is that obstruction of justice could have gotten in the way of us discovering whether there was a collusion with Russians. We know that, at the very least, that people in the Trump campaign did communicate with Russian cutouts. That's been absolutely revealed as a factual event. So for the main thing that the media is focusing on to be no collusion, whereas he might have obstructed justice, which is what got in the way of us discovering that.
Well, that's, I think, real. You bring up a valid point. Let me go to Rory Little on this, who's with us, professor of law at UC Hastings College of Law. It does seem to be maybe a little overweight on from the media on the other things aside. I mean, no collusion, for example, which President Trump, somebody said 125 times. And we've got not all that much about no exoneration, because the president has essentially tried to kind of obviate it by saying he was fully exonerated.
Yes, he was not fully exonerated. We know that much from the Barr letter, which says Mueller said this does not exonerate the president. Your caller's point is exactly right, that there is a lot of evidence that there might have been obstruction. You mentioned it before. When Trump talked to Lester Holt, he said, I fired Comey because I was worried about, or I was concerned about, this Russian investigation that the FBI was directing at that time, and Comey was the director of the FBI. A lot of prosecutors would indict on that sort of evidence. Oh, you fired the leader of the investigation because you were concerned about it. And they would leave the question of intent for a jury. Here, the attorney general and the deputy have acted as the jury on that question. And I think that's the biggest legal question remaining for the Democrats here.
Well, we do have Sean Walsh here with us now, and we'll bring you into this, Sean. Sean Walsh is GOP consultant, principal at Wilson Walsh, George Ross. Good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Let me also say good morning to Marcy Wheeler, who is also joining us, an independent journalist who covers national security and civil liberties. Marcy Wheeler, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Sean, you want to direct a response to this, since it's come up here, about the not enough emphasis on no exoneration?
Well, I guess coulda, woulda, shoulda. I mean, if you look at this entire process, you had a lot of Republicans, not a lot, but actually Trump mostly, trying to undermine Mr. Mueller. It was a sham, a fraud. He was bringing in a whole bunch of Democrat activist-type lawyers who worked in former Democratic administrations. He was biased. And then you had Democrats in Congress and throughout the land saying, protect the Mueller investigation at all costs. You know, people will perish if we don't. The man comes out with his report, with his entire team, and the bottom line was he did not find enough to move forward on obstruction. So, I mean, the bottom line is he did what he set out to do. Everything I think that Mr. Mueller did was to the letter of the law and was very, very technical, I think, once if the report ever actually does get released. But he was thorough, I think very, very thorough, and these are his conclusions.
So, if, as you say, he did everything according to the letter of the law, why did the President of the United States call it an illegal takedown? Because that's the word. Those are the words he used.
Because that's Donald Trump. I mean, look, I am a Republican. I've got lots of friends that are Republicans. No surprise. And we get appalled each and every day of the types of rhetoric that the president spews out there. He's his own worst enemy here. Were it me and were I advising him in the White House, I would say, you know what? This report did what you need to do. Please don't go out and talk about it. Just say, this proved I did nothing wrong. Move on. And then pivot to your campaign, because if you keep poking people in the eye, you're going to get more legitimacy to the various congressional investigations that are going on now. And as Rory mentioned earlier in the segment, and I think the New York Times Justice Department reporter, Mr. Mueller was only focused on those two particular issues, it appears, and that anything else that came his way got shuffled out to the Southern District of New York, and they are an island, as Rory said, unto themselves. So he's not out of the woods per se, but in this case, take your win and say, I'm moving on.
Marcy Wheeler, let's hear from you on this.
Yeah, very specifically addressing the caller's point. One of the things Trump did to obstruct justice, and in fact, Barr said in his confirmation hearing quite clearly that doing this was a crime, not knowing that Trump has done it, is to offer pardons in exchange for altered testimony. We know that he floated a pardon to Paul Manafort. We know that when Manafort was supposed to be cooperating with Mueller, he in fact lied. And one of the things he lied about was why on August 2nd, 2016, he shared polling data with Konstantin Kalimnik, whom the FBI believes has ties to Russian intelligence, at a meeting where he also discussed a Ukrainian peace deal that would amount to sanctions relief. So he lied about that. A judge has already agreed that he lied about that. That action, sharing the polling data with Konstantin Kalimnik, is actually not even covered by the scope of what Mueller said he addressed. That there's a short quote in the Barr letter saying Mueller was not able to establish any coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russian government.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, Marcy. Even with all that polling data, for example, that Manafort used through Kalimnik?
Right, right. But the point is that Konstantin Kalimnik, while the FBI alleges that he has ties to the Russian government, to the Russian intelligence, he's not the Russian government. So the exoneration, such as Barr quotes Mueller in this four-page letter, only extends to the Russian government. One of the things that Rosenstein hired Mueller to investigate, which isn't addressed in the four-page letter, is what the nature of links between the Trump campaign and the Russian government is. And as has already been pointed out, the links are always between cutouts. Konstantin Kalimnik was one of the known cutouts. And what happened is Trump offered a pardon. With that pardon in mind, and Andrew Weissman said this in court, he said, the reason we think that Manafort is lying about this point in particular is because we think he's doing it to get a pardon. And Manafort lied about it. We still don't know the answer to the question of why he traded that polling data in a conversation where he was talking about sanctions relief. And yet Barr, having said in his confirmation hearing that offering pardons for testimony would be obstruction, nevertheless somehow found that Trump did not obstruct justice.
Yeah, I read your article in the New Republican. You called it a legal sleight of hand in terms of changing things, yeah?
Well, I mean, it's worse than that for Barr, because Barr very clearly three times was asked this in his confirmation hearing. The terms of what we know Trump to have done all reach the bar of what Barr said amount to obstruction of justice. And there's the other question, which is the OLC holds that the sitting president cannot be indicted. So if that's the case, and Barr sort of said this in his letter, he's like, well, we didn't reach the constitutional issue. If that's the case, then the proper thing to do with evidence for and against an obstruction case against the president is not to have the attorney general exonerate it, because that's not a proper role for the Department of Justice. The proper thing to do is to immediately share that with the House Judiciary Committee, because they are the arbiters of whether a president has violated his oath of office in offering pardons to get his associates to lie about conduct that actually isn't covered in the exonerations in the memo yesterday.
And again, Marcy Wheeler is an independent journalist covering national security and civil liberties. I want to get as many of you on here as I can. A lot of questions, a lot of comments. Jim, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I have 2 points to make. First, I'm wondering why Mueller, in his report, when he determined that it was a jump ball call in terms of obstruction, that he deferred the determination of that to Barr, rather than advising that this is a matter of fact that should be determined by the Congress. And second, the issue of collusion, conspiracy, coordination with the Russians. The fact that Mueller apparently did not find sufficient evidence to indict says to me that he didn't find evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. And there are lower standards of proof, preponderance of the evidence, clear and convincing, that may have been met during the course of the investigation, but not sufficient enough to refer for a conclusion that he met.
Jim, I thank you for those questions. Let me go to Rory Little. Rory.
Well, quick answers. Why did Mueller defer? The letter summarizes, so we don't know exactly what Mueller said in his report, but what the letter says is that Mueller admits that he did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment and that he did not draw a conclusion one way or the other as to whether the examined conduct constitutes obstruction, and it leaves unresolved this question. He did not recommend who should resolve it because I don't think that's his job, and Bob Mueller sticks to his task. His task was to assemble the evidence, investigate it, and lay it out. So whether the Attorney General should do that or whether a jury should do that or whether Congress should do that, I think that's a question above his pay grade in a sense. I think it's important what Marcy said. This letter refers to no conspiracy with the Russian government. It doesn't say no conspiracy with Russians. And that's a very careful
word. Even Russians who have ties to the Russian government.
Cutouts, as she calls them. Yeah. And I think that's a very carefully worded sentence. Again, that's why we want to see the full report.
Sean Walsh, you want in here?
Well, I don't know. You listen to some of the callers and some of the Democratic members of Congress. It's like Little Orphan Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow. Hope springs eternal that something is going to spring from some tidbit from this investigation. So Rory's correct. This Mr. Mueller was not part of the former independent counsel statute. He was impaneled by the Department of Justice to do that report and send that report back to the Department of Justice. He did what he was supposed to do within the four corners of what he was asked to do. So, you know, I don't think Mr. Mueller's holding anything back. Again, if you look at the August members that were part of his group doing these reviews, I think if there were anything that was clear and convincing, he would have put that forward. Again, Mueller was a hero to Democrats until about 20 hours ago. Now he's, you know, what's he equivocating on?
He's still a hero, Sean.
Indeed.
Well, let me go back. I want to go to as many of our callers as we can, but back to you, Marcy Wheeler. I mean, the Democrats are trying to make this full report possible and make it essentially transparent. And they say essentially that that is what the American people demand and observe, deserve and so forth. The irony in this is that this Mueller investigation doesn't seem to weigh a whole lot in the polls. I mean, I don't know if that's because of the changing of the narrative by the Trump administration that they've been hammering along all along. But aside from things like we're talking about the next hour, child poverty, education, home ownership, et cetera, it weighs pretty small.
I think the critics on the left of the Democrats' focus on the Russian investigation, that it distracts from things like child poverty or I live in the Midwest, the way in which Trump's policies have really devastated farmers, the farmers who elected him. I think Democrats do need to pay attention to those issues. But I think it is simply the case that, I've never said Robert Mueller is a hero. I work on civil liberties and I've got my gripes with him. I do think that the investigation was conducted honorably. I think that we know things will be in the report which are not covered by the exoneration yesterday. Just as an example, we know that Roger Stone was in personal discussions with Trump. We know that the campaign directed Roger Stone to go optimize the release of the WikiLeaks emails. And we know that after he succeeded in doing so, the campaign congratulated him for doing so. The exoneration in the memo yesterday is limited to the Russian government. It doesn't include WikiLeaks. And so that's one example where not only is what Barr did yesterday unrelated to conduct that is obviously abusive, obviously problematic, and that Trump has tried to cover up, but it is stuff that won't be shared under the terms that Barr has laid out in his letter because it involves stuff that is an ongoing criminal investigation. I think that the public as a whole ought to be able to know who directed people on Trump's campaign to go ask Roger Stone to optimize the damage done by emails stolen by the Russian government to help Trump get elected.
Plus, there is a lot of underlying evidence in that report that has not come forward. And let me bring another caller aboard, and that's you, Susan. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. My question is related to some of the discussion that you just had with the guest, and that is,
Susan, it's a very bad connection, I'm sorry to say. I can barely even hear you. Your voice is muffled. Let me see if we can get you to call back on a better phone. Let me go to another caller here. David joins us. David, you're on.
Yeah, how are you, Michael, and your guests? A couple of different things. After World War One, money laundering was seen as currency speculating was seen as such an evil that the IMF was created after World War II, and so the stability of the world's currencies have been based upon the idea that the U.S. dollar was the base currency. Now, if we were to look at Trump being organized crime, that Russia is a kleptocracy, and that they need to do money laundering, and they need currency speculation in order to get their best rate of exchange, what would be the chance of running some sort of crimes against Trump for demeaning the U.S. dollar in order to get rid of the IMF and get back to individual currencies fighting against each other and facilitating the rise of, you know, organized crime and kleptocracy?
David, that's an original conclusion or opinion that you're putting forward there. But I come back to the fact here, I don't know about the currency and the effect of the currency as a legal question, Rory, a little bit. There are a lot of legal questions concerning money laundering and Deutsche Bank and its role, and those are going to fall under the purview of the Southern District of New York, presumably.
At least the Southern District and maybe the Washington, D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office. We know that Bob Mueller hired a federal prosecutor whose expertise is money laundering in international context. We don't know what the report says about that, if anything, and we're pretty sure that that is still continuing, that investigation.
I want to read some comments that are coming in. Let me thank the caller. I think we need another legal opinion on the currency question that he brings up affecting monetary currency. Here's Marjorie, though, who writes, the quote from Mueller printed in the New York Times is that the investigation did not establish conspiracy. That is very different from finding no evidence. Yet most news outlets, including the opening of the segment, say that the Mueller investigation found no evidence. That seems to be misleading reporting, leading to unfortunate pronouncements. We're getting back to the media here, and I want to bring up a question about that, Marcy Wheeler. There's been Matt Taibbi, in fact, wrote a whole article about how the media has got a black eye on this. And he says that, in fact, he quoted ABC's Tony Morin as saying this is a reckoning for the media. Those sound like pretty strong words for me. But if the Democrats have to use caution here in terms of how much they're going to move forward, then certainly the media does as well, doesn't it?
Taibbi's piece is full of errors. So if he wants to lecture the media about their reporting, he might want to rewrite it and fix the errors first. Just as one example, he claims, for example, that the errors only ever go against Trump on this story. I've been working for 6 weeks to get the New York Times to correct an error about the sharing of that polling data back on August 2nd, 2016, and they haven't corrected that error. One way to find somebody who's a fraudster on the question of the Russian interference is when they say, oh, the Democrats didn't hand their server singular over to the FBI. If you read the GRU indictment, there's tens of servers referred to in there, many of which never were in the possession of the DNC, all of which the FBI was able to get access to. So, you know, Taibbi, I said earlier, I think that Democrats who complain that Democrats have been focusing on Russia rather than on bread and butter issues like child poverty, they're right. But to come and write a piece that is full of obvious errors and then claim, well, the media reporting on this is irresponsible, is sort of humorous, I think.
Well, since we're on the media for the moment, Sean Walsh, I'm going to read a comment from Julie and get your response as a Republican. She writes, after 22 months and millions of dollars and no evidence of collusion was found, can we, the people, expect an apology from the media who have spent more than 2 years lying to the American people about our president?
Well, to use a Dana Carvey line from Senate Live, not going to happen. I will tell you, I worked in the Reagan White House press office, Bush White House press office, Schwarzenegger communications during his campaign, and Wilson communications. Some of my closest friends are media folks still in the White House press corps today. And I will tell you, a number of my Republican friends really, really despise Donald Trump, and a lot of my media friends really, really despise Donald Trump. And I just think that some of them, if in the quiet of a beer in a quiet pub in Dublin, will tell you that they get whipped up on him. There's just something Pavlovian that when they see him, they just go after him. And
you talk about Dublin in the East Bay or in Ireland?
Well, both.
Either.
Both. So there, I do think there is a fervor in the media that is really difficult to look at Mr. Trump objectively. That's number one. And number two, that Republicans feel, and to pivot a little bit, is that, you know, they look at how the genesis of this happened, that you had Brennan and you had members of the National Security Intelligence Agency then contracting out with a former spy from Great Britain using Democratic National Committee dollars to pay for it. You have a guy who's in the FBI whose wife is working for that very company. So there's a lot of Republicans who say, OK, you know, let's look at the genesis of how this whole thing started. And now Senator Graham is actually saying he's going to do that. Now, do I think we should be spending our time, money and effort on that? Probably not. But Republicans, I'm here from a Republican perspective, think that that should be equally looked at as well. And was this whole thing a political kind of campaign and political hit job that got a life of its own?
Now, since you mentioned Senator Graham, he also said that Nadler should not go forward with any kind of investigation here. Let me read some more comments. A listener writes, the Mueller investigation couldn't find evidence of a conspiracy to collude the Russian government. That's a very narrow finding. It's now up to Congress to pick up the investigation and follow the money received by the Trump Organization, family, and Trump himself to find out if Trump is indeed a Russian asset. And here's Tom, who says, now the Democrats can no longer cower behind Mueller. They will have to get their collective hands dirty. But the pretense of fact-finding has now evaporated, and it is now the obvious, naked, vindictive witch hunt we knew this was all along. And here's Chris, who writes, we know Donald Trump Jr. met with a hostile foreign power under the auspices of receiving dirt on Hillary Clinton during the campaign. How is this act alone not cause for a conspiracy to defraud the United States charge? Even if no further actions were taken, isn't the meeting itself enough to indict Rory Little?
Well, I want to go back to what your caller Marjorie said. This report does not say there was no evidence to support any of this. In fact, I'll read you a quote from Bill Barr's letter. Says the report sets out evidence on both sides of the question and leaves unresolved. Now, that's with regard to the obstruction, but there was evidence on both sides of all of these questions.
Which is why it's really important for this whole report to be seen by the public, don't you think?
Exactly. And not to mention the fact that I will bet you Bob Mueller's report looked at some of these other aspects that are undiscussed, these aspects about how did it originate? What about that company that, Andy McCabe, the FBI agent, was tied to? Here's the president firing the director of the FBI, firing the deputy McCabe on the same investigation, drumming out a couple of other agents on the investigation. These are questions that I bet you Bob Mueller's report at least discussed or examined, and we don't know what they say.
And you want to say something here, Sean Walsh?
I do, which not since J. Edgar Hoover does it appear that the FBI and the Justice Department was as political as this Justice Department was. And I do think that really should get a very, very thorough review and investigation.
It got a primal response from our other guest here. You want to say something here, Marcy?
Yeah, let me correct Sean, because he is in error about the genesis of this investigation. The investigation started because a crime happened. The Russians hacked a server in the United States and stole information. Then the investigation started because an aide to Donald Trump was told by another cutout to the Russian government that they were going to help Trump get elected by releasing emails from Hillary Clinton. That's how the investigation started. Yes, Christopher and I've been critical of the Steele dossier literally from day one, and I agree that Democrats were wrong to focus on it. But to suggest that the FBI should not accept intelligence from a trusted intelligence agent, from an ally, who has a years-long history of being accurate on Russian intelligence, on the kind of kleptocracy that we're talking about, is to suggest that the government should not take Russian attacks on the United States seriously. And that is the position that the Republican Party institutionally has gotten to in their efforts to protect Donald Trump.
Let me give Sean an opportunity to respond.
Apparently, I'm factually incorrect, and the New York Times is factually incorrect. Mr. Steele was being paid by the Democratic National Committee to do his work. And the FBI then did something that occasionally is done in media, which is to put things out in the media to generate interest. And they did that by leaking stories that then was part of something to get a FISA warrant, a national security warrant. So they were playing politics at the most guttural level. And I think, you know, the bottom line is maybe I'm wrong, but let's have somebody look at this thing
from top. Can I correct you again?
Please.
Can I correct you again? Because the FBI is not accused of leaking. Yes, Steele leaked.
Mr. McCabe was fired for that point.
McCabe was fired for leaking about, for basically hurting Hillary Clinton. I mean, his leak was to say, yes, the FBI is investigating the Clinton Foundation. And, oh, by the way, do you know where that investigation came from? It came from Russia. It came from Republican Oppo research as well.
Boy, we got back to the genesis from this report and trying to take apart this report and find out really what it means. We're going to have to wait for more because all we have now is a four-page.
The investigation was a crime committed against the United States. If the Republicans are on the record saying that the FBI should not investigate when Russians hack Americans, that's fine. That's their policy. Let that be it. But let it be very clear that the genesis of this investigation comes from Russians hacking America.
All right. You got the final word, Katie Brenner. Marcy Wheeler, because we are out of time here. I was going to mention that Katie Brenner was with us earlier. Justice Department reporter for the New York Times. I want to thank Marcy Wheeler, who's an independent journalist covering national security and civil liberties. Thank Sean Walsh, GOP political consultant and principal at Wilson Walsh, George Ross. And thanks to Rory Little, professor of law at UC Hastings College of the Law and professor of constitutional law and actually former federal prosecutor. And thank you, our listeners, because we wouldn't be here without you. And we are going to talk about child poverty in the next hour, so stay tuned for that. You can continue this discussion. I encourage it online, kqed.org/forum. Sorry to those of you we couldn't get to in the calls and emails, but we'll continue to cover. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Nauman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.